Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. I will start this program with an article from The Inquirer. Democrats sue Trump administration over elections executive order, by Mariana Alfaro. Several Democratic groups, including the Democratic National Committee, along with Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York also, sued the Trump administration over Donald Trump's executive order that calls for change to the election system, including a requirement that people provide proof of citizenship when registering to vote. The lawsuit, which also lists the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and the Democratic Governors Association as plaintiffs, alleges that Trump's executive order, quote, seeks to impose radical changes on how Americans register to vote, cast a ballot, and participate in our democracy, all of which threaten to disenfranchise lawful voters and none of which is legal, unquote. In a statement, the White House dismissed the Democrats' claims, accusing the party of having, quote, disdain for the Constitution, unquote, and arguing that Democrats are showing, again a quote, their insane objections to the president's common-sense executive actions to require proof of U.S. citizenship in an effort to protect the integrity of American elections, unquote. The Trump administration is standing up for free, fair, and honest elections, and asking this basic question is essential for our constitutional republic, said White House spokesman Harrison Fields. The Democrats' lawsuit has quickly been followed by two more lawsuits filed by voters' rights groups. One, filed by the Campaign Legal Center and the State Democracy Defenders Fund on behalf of the League of United Latin American Citizens, Secure Families Initiative, and the Arizona Students Association, accuses the Trump administration of attempting to, quote, upend voter registration and mail voting procedures, an exercise of power that the Constitution gives to states and Congress, not the president, unquote. The third lawsuit, filed by the Brennan Center for Justice, the American Civil Liberties Union, and other legal aid organizations on behalf of groups including the League of Women Voters of the United States, the Hispanic Federation, the National Association of the Advancement of Colored People, similarly accuses the Trump administration of attempting to, quote, rip away power from the entities that have actual constitutional and statutory authority to regulate federal elections. The administration, they argue, is doing so, quote, in violation of the text and purpose of federal laws Congress enacted to make it easier for Americans to register to vote and cast ballots in federal elections, unquote. Trump's order marks a continuation of his long-standing fixation on election administration. Trump has baselessly claimed that the 2020 presidential race was riddled with fraud. Specifically, he has long said that citizens voted illegally in the race, even though there is no evidence of widespread fraud in the election, and non-citizen voting is exceedingly rare. Trump's order calls for a federal mandate to provide proof of citizenship to register to vote. It also directs the Election Commission, an agency governed by a statute enacted by Congress, to change the federal voter registration to require government-issued documentary proof of citizenship. And it attempts to bar states from counting mail ballots that officials receive after Election Day. 18 states allowed mail ballots in last year's elections that arrived later, so that they were postmarked by Election Day. It is unclear whether states would be required to adopt the federal form, because states typically produce their own voter registration forms, and voters are free to use either to register in federal elections. The U.S. Constitution does not assign the president any specific power to regulate elections, specifically designating the attempt to regulate the time, place, and manner, quote-unquote, of election to states, with a proviso that Congress can step in and overwrite state laws. Election experts say that Trump, through his executive order, is claiming power he does not have, and lawsuits over the measure are all but guaranteed, the Washington Post previously reported. Their lawsuit, the Democrats stated, that the order would force Trump's, quote, own design preferences be implemented on congressionally mandated voter registration forms, notwithstanding Congress's clear contrary commands. They also alleged that Trump's order, quote, forces numerous federal agencies to reveal sensitive personal information about millions of voters, unquote, to the U.S. DOGE service, which is run by Trump ally and billionaire Elon Musk. DOGE, which stands for Department of Government Efficiency and used to be the title of rulers of Italian cities during the medieval times and the Renaissance, is listed as a defendant in the suit, along with other agencies, including the Justice Department, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Departments of Defense, Interior, Veterans Affairs, and State. The Democrats in the suit accuse Trump and the administration of attempting to wield federal dollars, quote, as a cudgel to force states to do the president's bidding to the detriment of their voters, threatening to deprive them of crucial grant fund elections and law enforcement, unquote. In a statement, Democratic National Committee Chairman Ken Martin, alongside Kansas Governor Laura Kelly, head of the Democratic Governors Association, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat of New York, chair of the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee, Representative Susan DelBene, Democrat of Washington State, chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, Schumer and Jeffries, said that the order amounts to, quote, an unconstitutional power grab from Donald Trump, unquote. And another quote, Donald Trump and DOGE are doing this as an attempt to rationalize their repeatedly debunked conspiracy theories and set the groundwork to throw out legal votes and ignore election outcomes they do not like, unquote, the statement said. It's anti-American, and Democrats are using every tool at our disposal, including taking Trump to court, to stop this illegal overreach that undermines our democracy. And that is also a quote. And now, by John Harris. As a young man, I fell in love with the United States. The country's soul is still there, despite Trump's best efforts to destroy it. For many of us, the United States means music, progress, hope. Whatever their president does, plenty of Americans continue to believe in these two. It seems as inevitable as the economic chaos let loose by Donald Trump's mad avalanche of tariffs, a precipitous drop in the number of tourists visiting the U.S., which is now forecast to be even worse than initially feared. In February, overseas travel to the country was down by 5% compared with the previous year, and now reputable forecasters are predicting a drop of nearly twice that size. We all know why. Trump's hostile words about Canada and Mexico have hit the U.S.'s top two markets for tourism. Finnish, German, and Danish transgender and non-binary people have been advised by their governments to contact a U.S. diplomatic mission before traveling there. Note also a trickle of reports about outsiders falling foul of the cruel stringency apparently now gripping the American authorities. A 28-year-old woman from North Wales, held for 19 days in the detention center and escorted on to her plane home in chains. The French scientist, who was summarily denied entry into the U.S. after his phone was found to contain messages criticizing the president. Those stories intensify the Trump administration's general air of brutality and belligerence, which also brings familiar fears to the surface of guns, politicized thuggery, and a country in a frighteningly volatile state. The result is the sudden understanding of the United States as somewhere that may be best unvisited, which, for millions of people, brings on a very painful pang of loss. Many of us, after all, have always had our understanding of the world shaped by what some people call American soft power. My first sense of the U.S.'s allure came when I was a four-year-old watching the glorious educational TV show Sesame Street and being spellbound by its multiracial cast and the way it offered a much more thrilling take on letters and numbers and life than the staid fare we got from the BBC and ITV. A little later on, I can recall a few lucky childhood friends returning from American holidays, in Florida usually, coming home with comics and sweets that increased my sense of the states as a beguiling land of dreams. And then came the clincher, a great mountain of music which still sits at the heart of my understanding of what the U.S. is and how it may survive its current crises. The best American music is nothing if not honest. For me, it worked as a corrective to any rose-tinted ideas I had about the U.S., while somehow making me even more dazzled. That is definitely true of a run of records made between the late 1960s and mid-1970s, which I still return to again and again. The music of the consummate social commentator Curtis Mayfield, or the mixture of small P politics and joyous self-actualization that runs through Stevie Wonder's peak work, from Music of My Mind, 1972, to 1976's Songs in the Key of Life. By way of listening to something utterly different, when I first became immersed in country music, I heard another kind of American truth, the sound of men finding space to be wounded, broken, and vulnerable. And then I finally went there, first to the usual big cities, and then to parts of the country too often overlooked. 20 or so years ago, I took repeated trips to the Deep South, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, and found myself simultaneously holding two completely contradictory sets of thoughts. One was to do with the awful intersection of racism, institutional and everyday, and poverty, and the plain fact that the richest country in the world have left so many people to sink. The other, though, was a sense that at least some of these places were making fitful and hesitant progress towards something better. One of my guidebooks talked about a region going through something akin to the journey South Africa had taken after the end of apartheid. On a good day, it was just about possible to believe it. One of my most vivid memories of a stiflingly hot weekday night in the Mississippi Delta town of Clarksdale, which is still a byword for cotton and slavery and their long and awful legacy. In a bar owned by the actor Morgan Freeman, I watched a prodigiously talented teenager from the Middle East, her family were refugees, who, thanks to an educational program run by the town's Blues Museum, had learned to play spellbinding lead guitar in the style of such stars as Buddy Guy and Albert King. She did her stuff, watched by a mixed crowd, who were not just amazed, but seemed to share some idea that what we were watching was a small symbol of things improving. Not long after the advent of Barack Obama's presidency seemed to spectacularly crystallize some of the same sense of everyday hope, and that very American line paraphrased from the preamble of the Constitution about progress towards a more perfect union. Whatever that means, and notwithstanding all the hatred, hypocrisy, slaughter, and cruelty woven through the American story, I can still feel its force. But Trump clearly wants to take his country in the opposite direction, partially by trying to reshape his country's culture and the image it presents the world. This is the meaning of, among scores of other actions, the removal of Black Americans from educational material produced by the Arlington National Cemetery, Trump's attacks on, quote, improper, divisive, or anti-American ideology, unquote, within the Smithsonian Museum Network, and his self-installation as the chair of the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. Such Republican lawmakers as a surreally stupid Congresswoman, Marjorie Taylor Greene, even want to defund Sesame Street. In the midst of all those unhinged economic policies and assaults on science and academia, these moves are in danger of being overlooked, but they are just as important. My daughter is 15 and as interested in the U.S. as I was at her age, something boosted by the fact that the country, between 1789 and 1900, is part of her GCSE history syllabus. She wants to visit the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, and Sun Studios, where rock and roll first took flight. When she finally gets to New York, her first stops will include the Museum of Modern Art and what remains of the old Greenwich Village. I now wonder, should we go? But I think we still will, for one very good reason, that in the end, everything those places and institutions represent will prove to be Trump's undoing. Put another way, he is not America. And for those of us who remain fascinated by the United States, the best response to his misrule is not to turn away, but to keep faith with the Americans who understand that, not as dazzled outsiders, but people whose future depends on something better. And that was John Harris, who is a Guardian columnist. And me, Michael McCusker, I lived in Greenwich Village for quite a spell and enjoyed living in that place immensely. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is this program's engineer. The flattery fantasy of adding Donald Trump's visage to Mount Rushmore is a disgusting example of the sordid demockery of democracy, of the USA under Trump's presidency.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.